The Lord be with you. Good morning. Another beautiful Powell River day. I hope wherever you're joining us from that you also have a beautiful August morning, or maybe afternoon by now for some folks. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts this morning be acceptable to you, O Holy One. Last week, Stuart took us on a journey through the entire life of Joseph as told in the book of Genesis. It is, Stuart suggested, one of the most powerful stories of the Hebrew Scriptures. After hearing Stuart's overview and preparing for this sermon, I think he may be onto something. For me, it's a story that I never paid a lot of attention to, and there's a tremendous amount of richness there. There are a few aspects of this epic story of Joseph that I find particularly relevant to the times we are living in today. Great stories, with a capital S, bears the test of time, even 3,000 years of time, not to mention transmission through a whole series of languages and cultures. Its relevance and meaning endures. In today's account of the Joseph epic, Joseph's brothers have returned to Egypt a second time to seek grain and bread in a time of famine. Their father Jacob has sent them in hopes of keeping his clan alive, as their own food resources in Canaan were becoming ever more scarce. Canaan and Egypt were, of course, neighboring states, but the journey would still have taken many days by foot and by pack donkey. It was a significant journey to undertake, and to do it a second time, they were clearly very desperate. When the brothers are finally brought before Joseph, who is now the governor of all of Egypt, they have no idea who they are talking to. For all they knew, their younger brother had long since perished as a slave in this foreign land. They cannot conceive of the possibility that this high official, dressed no doubt like royalty, could be the same person they betrayed several years ago. But Joseph knows. In fact, he recognized his brothers from the moment he laid eyes on them during their first trip to Egypt. And he's been waiting for the right moment to reveal himself to them. This time, when his brothers are before him, Joseph is overcome with emotion. He can no longer contain the truth of who he is. He must end the ruse. As the scripture says, "Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, 'Send everyone away from me.'" One would think that Joseph's predominant emotion might be anger or resentment at the betrayal he suffered by his own flesh and blood at a very young age. But no, Joseph weeps in the presence of his brothers. In fact, he weeps so loudly, the text says, that the Egyptians heard it, and that the very household of Pharaoh heard it. This was a big outpouring of emotion. I take this to mean that Joseph has long been carrying inside of himself a deep wound for all that he lost so many years ago. The loss of his family, the loss of his homeland, the loss of his identity as a Canaanite, and probably the loss of his innocence in being so coldly betrayed by the older brothers he likely admired and trusted. Despite the remarkable success, prestige, and wealth he has achieved in Egypt, and remember, he started out there as a slave, he's been carrying for many years a deep grief. All the fame and glory in the world cannot overcome this. Joseph could have chosen revenge and had his brothers bound and thrown into a pit as they had done to him. Or he could have ignored them altogether and continued to enjoy the considerable benefits of being a member of the Egyptian elite. But no, another deeper, more urgent desire wells up inside of him, and that is the desire for reconciliation. The first thing Joseph says when revealing his identity is, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" He's desperate to know if he will ever see his father again. He's desperate to be reconnected to his family and to his roots. I find it very significant that in order for Joseph to move forward with reconciliation, he must first shed his tears. This foreshadows, perhaps, the time of the Babylonian exile many centuries later, when the Jewish people must first express and move through their grief, crying and wailing by the river of Babylon, before they were ready for the long journey home to Israel. In order to recover what we have lost, in order to reconcile, in order to find the wholeness that we all so desperately seek, we must be prepared first to move through, and not around or above, the sorrows that linger in our hearts. We all go through our lives experiencing some degree of trauma, loss, separation, or dislocation from our deepest selves. And while it is common to want to avoid sorrow, the story of Joseph would suggest that it may be our very grief and sorrow that can help us find the way back to wholeness. Having expressed his grief, Joseph comforts his dumbfounded brothers and attempts to release them of their guilt. "And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." Now, I think Joseph had every right to at least give his brothers a sound smack on the side of the head for the way they had treated him, but he doesn't go there. Rather, he proceeds right away to work for his reunification with his family by offering them safety and security in Egypt in the midst of a growing social emergency, a 7-year famine. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. Imagine a 7-year famine. I will assume that most of us gathered today, thankfully, have not had prolonged periods in our lives when we've gone without the most basic of food we have needed for our survival. But of course, this is a daily reality for many of the world's people today and throughout human history. I've been told that starvation is one of the most painful things a human being can possibly endure, physically, emotionally, and presumably spiritually. When no food is available, every waking moment becomes about finding food. One's whole being is consumed by hunger until the hunger in the end consumes the body itself. A 7-year famine suggests an insurmountable time for the average person to be able to survive. Only a remnant on earth, as Joseph expresses it, may be fortunate to endure such a time of scarcity. So Joseph's entire clan, under the direction of Jacob, moves to Egypt in a time of great social calamity. They, like a growing number of people around the world today, have become climate refugees. Critical to the story is that Joseph sees the presence of God in and through these tragic events. Both the betrayal he suffered at the hands of his brothers and in the 7-year famine that came to him in a dream. For Joseph, somehow, God is acting in the midst of all of this tragedy and suffering. This can be a challenging theology to get our heads around. At least for me it is. Did God make these terrible things happen, such as a famine that would have killed thousands of people, especially those without the kind of Joseph had, so that God's grace could be known to them? Does God cause bad things to happen to good people? For me, that is an unacceptable proposition. If we hold such a view, then we can begin to justify many terrible, horrific events in history as somehow also being the will of God. What kind of a God would will the Holocaust, the genocide of indigenous peoples, 9/11, or to be a little more current, perhaps, the COVID-19 pandemic? That would be a rather sadistic, tyrannical God now, wouldn't it? So we must search for another way to understand what Joseph asserts is the design presence in the midst of these tragic events unfolding in his story and in our world today. Rather than seeing God as the cause of such events, an alternative may be to view God as always waiting, always hoping, always urging us to transform tragedy and suffering into something that can be life-giving, restorative, and maybe even redemptive. Some of the terrible things that we endure in our world are wholly preventable. Violence, injustice, poverty, racism, genocide, or environmental destruction. But others, like natural disasters, illness, or accidents, are less preventable and seem to be the price we pay for the great and fragile gift of being alive in this world. The betrayal and violence that Joseph suffered at the hands of his brothers was, of course, entirely avoidable. The 7-year famine described in the story, I'm going to assume, was a reference to one of the many cycles of drought that caused famine throughout time to time in the ancient world. But in both cases, Joseph sees God as waiting and ready to guide the human community into something life-giving through these terrible events. And so we might ask, what good could possibly come of the global crisis we find ourselves mired in today? Does God call us, like Joseph, to embrace transformative possibilities in the midst of our own difficult time? There's no doubt that COVID-19 has caused and is causing tremendous suffering and death around the world, and we are by no means through it yet. By the grace of God, may this crisis be much shorter lived than the 7-year famine of Joseph's time. What, if any, life-giving possibilities might come from this unique and challenging historical time that we are living through together? Where might reconciliation or redemption be found? We cannot know where this crisis will lead us. But there are some really inspiring expressions of hope and longing for some kind of transformative good that I've heard through different folks, either on social media or in person. And I'll just share a few of the ones that I've been hearing. That perhaps we'll take a serious look because of this pandemic at how the elderly are cared for in our country, and ensure that we do a better job of offering dignity to people in the final years of their lives. That we are shaken out of this trance of mindless consumption and pollution that we seem to be trapped in, that has defined our generation and defiled the planet. That the pandemic might inspire us to deepen our commitment to care for each other, to minister to each other, and to protect the most vulnerable in our communities, including through such mechanisms as the proposed guaranteed annual income. That we embrace simplicity and focus on relationships, community, and things that bring us deeper meaning and lasting satisfaction in this life, rather than the things that we have often busied ourselves with. That perhaps by consuming less and by traveling less, we offer a Sabbath to the many species in peril on this planet and allow for the possibility of a slowing down of our mad rush towards catastrophic climate change. And finally, I've heard many people say that a return to normal is not what we need. That normal has, in fact, been a big part of the problem. And that this pandemic may in some way allow for imagining a new way forward, for a definitive historical shift that may provide hope for the world's poor in particular, and for the planet itself. The Joseph story describes a monumental shift for the Hebrew people as they moved en masse to settle in Egypt for several generations, where we are told they lived in prosperity and increased greatly in numbers. Jacob, Joseph's father, lived to the ripe old age of 147, and Joseph himself lived to 110. Clearly, they must have had excellent elder care back in those times. But life was never the same again for the Hebrew people. And so will our lives likely never be quite the same again either by the time we come out the other end of this pandemic. For several generations, the Hebrews lived in harmony and in safety in Egypt, but it did not last forever. Eventually, the new Pharaoh became threatened by their growing numbers and their prosperity that they had achieved. So he stripped them all of their rights and enslaved every person. Once again, the Hebrew people confronted terrible tragedy and struggled to discern the voice of God calling them towards liberation, to a new freedom from a new kind of oppression. And so too does our journey continue in these difficult days. May our tears and our grief lead us towards the wholeness we so deeply desire. May we have the wisdom and the courage to heed the whisper of the divine voice infiltrating our dreams, seducing us onwards towards a new land of possibilities beyond the horizon that we know today. And by the grace of God, may this church community come through this crisis more united, more loving, and more willing to be God's voice in a struggling world. Amen.